Hello, and welcome to the City Club of Cleveland, where we are devoted to conversations of consequence that help democracy thrive. It's Wednesday, March 6th, and I'm Deidre McPherson, sometimes bike consultant, arts and cultural programmer, and I'm a moderator for today's forum. We are at the Happy Dog in Gordon Square for the City Club's monthly Take On series, and tonight we're taking on pedestrian and cycling safety. According to you, yes, come on, let's give it up for bikers. All right, so according to the U.S. News, more than 7,500 people were killed in 2022 after being struck by vehicles while walking along or across U.S. roadways. The highest level seen in 41 years and up 77% since 2010. A similar trend is seen among cyclists, which in 2023 saw one of the deadliest years on record for bike fatalities. Here in Cleveland, a three-month-old was killed last October in a hit-skip on East 79th Street. And just before Christmas, beloved local chocolatier Cassandra Fear was also killed in a hit-skip on West 130th Street. When looking at the data and hearing the heart-wrenching stories of family and friends impacted by pedestrian deaths and injuries, it begs us to ask what can be done to ensure it's safe to walk and bike in America. Right now, several plans are in the works to improve pedestrian experiences and bike pathways in Cleveland. This provides an incredible opportunity to incorporate proven strategies that increase the safety of pedestrians and cyclists. Here with us today to discuss what those strategies should be are Callie Mersman, Senior Strategist for Transit and Mobility at the City of Cleveland. We also have Angie Schmidt, author of the book Ride of Way and founder of 3 Mile Per Hour Planning and Consulting. And last but certainly not least, we have Jacob Van Sickle, Executive Director at Bike Cleveland. All right, so if you have a question for our panelists, you can text it to 330-541-5794. And the City Club staff will try to work it into the second half of the program. Members and friends of the City Club, please join me in welcoming our speakers to the Happy Dog. All right, so we heard some of these statistics. Let's start off by just talking about why is safety such an issue locally and nationally, and what can be done about it?
All right, I think I'm supposed to start. I'm the bearer of bad news a little bit because I wrote a book about, it was published in 2020 about, I called it the pedestrian safety crisis in the U.S. And at the time I was calling it a crisis, there was only about 6,500 deaths a year. So just since the book was published in 2020, deaths rose about 20%, which is something that's really surprised even me. We kind of expected when the pandemic happened, people were driving a little less, we'd see safety outcomes improved. Instead, what we've seen is more reckless driving. There probably is a little bit of a decrease in enforcement. People are just sort of struggling mentally, and I think some of that is playing out on our roads. But one thing I focus on a lot in my book is sort of the suburbanization of poverty contributes. Also, there's sort of an arms race happening in the auto industry where people are trading sedans, you know, moderately sized sedans for bigger and bigger SUVs and pickups. And now some of the best-selling pickups in the United States, they're some of the best-selling cars altogether, are about 55 inches tall at the front end. So that's about, like, to the middle of my face, a standing woman who's about average height.
Thank you, Angie. Callie, why don't you give us a little bit of a local perspective? Why is safety such an issue locally?
So from the city perspective, we're all about building vibrant communities, and we're very fortunate in Cleveland that we have the historic urban fabric that contributes to walkable, bikeable neighborhoods. Unfortunately, safety concerns lead people to not want to choose those modes, and so as we look at this from the City of Cleveland perspective, wanting to attract residents back into the city, wanting to have vibrant storefronts on our historic commercial corridors, building walking and biking avenues and opportunities for people along with transit is really key to the long-term vitality of the city.
Jacob, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think I'll just add in terms of in terms of safety, when I think of safety around bicycle and pedestrians, I think of people I work with often who have been impacted by a crash. You know, I think of Alex Nose, owner of Joy Machines Bike Shop, who was hit by a car riding his bike on Fulton Avenue. I think of Ashley Shaw, executive director at Midtown, who was hit again on Lorraine Avenue, riding her bike, suffered a traumatic brain injury and is still dealing with the impacts of that. And even worse, I think about people like Laura Woods, whose daughter was killed walking to school to teach kids on Chester Avenue and killed. You know, those are names behind these numbers that we cite often. And, you know, each one of those people are somebody's mother, somebody's daughter, somebody's son. And for us, you know, those deaths are solvable. You know, there are ways to address the safety epidemic around traffic fatalities and serious injuries in our region. And, you know, we know where the crashes are happening and we know the solutions. It's, you know, speed tables, traffic calming, implementing road diets and bike lanes. You know, these are things that should be happening and are happening in our city, but, you know, they need to happen faster to be able to save lives.
Thank you, Jacob. So let's talk a little bit about speeding and some of these other behaviors you've each mentioned. With speeding, driving under the influence or DUIs with drugs or alcohol, and texting and driving as contributing factors to so many crashes, what tools do we have to address these statistics? Callie, would you like to start?
Sure, thanks. So Jacob just mentioned several different roadway design solutions that we have that control problems like speeding, like you mentioned. When we look at research around serious injuries and fatalities, speed of vehicles is a primary factor. And so as much as we can slow people and cars down, that really increases safety of people walking and biking on the streets. There are some design solutions that also, Deidre, to your question, pull in that distracted driving element. So just a couple of blocks to the south of us here are several intersections where we recently replaced traffic signals with mini roundabouts. And one of the things that we talked a lot about with residents as part of that project is that intersections that are not just open with a green light require drivers to put the phone down, really pay attention, make specific conscious decisions about yielding, when to go, slowing down to navigate around that. It requires turning on your brain and paying attention to the road in a way that wide open streets with traffic signals don't. There are other technology pieces that I think other parts of the country are experimenting with and leading the way. One thing I'm really interested in is speed governor technology. I work on our scooter and bike share program in the city, and all of those devices are capped at 15 miles per hour. As we all know, our cars don't have any sort of constraints like that. But as we are living in this denser urban environment, limiting speed and having vehicles that, you know, are constrained in their ability to go quickly is really key to safety.
All right, thank you, Callie. Angie, what about you? What are your thoughts about some of the tools that we have to address these statistics as far as regulation and things like that go?
Yeah, I agree with Callie that there's a lot of technological solutions that we just haven't deployed. The technology to limit vehicle speeds to the speed limit is available and it works, and they already use it in some fleets, and they're getting ready to roll it out across Europe. So we've just decided, I think there needs to be sort of a consciousness raising about this issue. There's 10,000 people killed every year in speeding-related crashes in the United States, and another 10,000 at least killed by drunk driving. But there is some positive progress on this. As part of the infrastructure bill, they included a provision that will require, it's called...
The HALT Act.
It automatically detects if someone is drunk, and it can shut off a vehicle, shut off an engine if someone is drunk. So they're going to require that to be mandated in all new cars, and it's a little bit controversial, but those kind of things are on the horizon. So it's not just this really huge process of overhauling all of our streets, although that is important. Also, there's technical solutions coming down the line that paired with that can really have a big impact.
Thank you, Angie. Jacob, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, technology plays a role, but in my perspective, you know, roadway designs really are the key to kind of influencing behavior and the way people act. You know, if you design a street so people have to go slow, then they can't speed, and it can help save lives.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those roadway designs? Like, we know that there's all types of development coming to the lakefront, and thinking about roadway design and some of these really exciting projects that are coming up to develop our lakefront, what are some of the design or urban best practices that could help those projects really succeed?
We're still sort of experimenting with that kind of thing in Cleveland, but we do have good examples. Like, if you go down to Battery Park, the developer there, I believe, made the decision, I'm sure in coordination with the city, they have big bump outs at every intersection. And I go down there with my kids, young kids, a few times in the last week, and they're biking across the street, and it really feels safe, even though there is a good amount of traffic. So those kind of tools, that's what was used in those intersection bump outs were used with great success in Hoboken and Jersey City. And those cities have achieved Vision Zero almost in Jersey City's case. But they're down to the point where they're having zero traffic deaths or zero traffic deaths outside of their state-controlled corridors. So that's one example. I this is a little bit controversial, but I live on Franklin Boulevard. And the city really, we for years advocated for some traffic calming because people would drive down the street about 60 miles per hour, and we couldn't even leave our windows open in the summer. So they did this solution of these roundabouts, and I know some people don't like them, but as a resident who lives there, I have to say it's night and day. I mean, it really is night and day. Slower vehicle traffic, and I even saw someone complaining about it. There, a lot of people were complaining about it. They used to use the road as a cut-through, and someone was saying in response, oh, well, you're just mad because you can't go 70 down Franklin anymore. And that was sort of the point, you know, and it did work. So there is a little bit of a political struggle that happens because you are pitting neighborhood residents against people that want to use the road as a high-speed cut-through. But this stuff can be really effective.
You mentioned the Lakefront Project. As many of you are probably aware, one of the alternatives that we're considering is a change to the design of the Shoreway between more or less West 6th to East 9th and beyond, thinking about how that could function differently and provide more access to the North Coast and North Coast Harbor. In terms of design, things that we're looking at from that regard are shortening crossing distances, so Angie mentioned curb extensions, pedestrian refuge islands as a center median are another aspect of that, and just creating the context that feels like drivers have to slow down, so through things like landscaping, trees, etc. Those are all very active conversations. We also have a couple of capital projects under design right now that are bringing separated bike lanes through some of our major corridors. That physical separation, whether it's a curb, a landscaped buffer, vertical separation, really creates a comfortable and safe environment for cyclists. Those are longer term investments that do take years to design and fund and build. And, you know, we have to wait a little bit of time for those to come to fruition. We're also looking at other quick build designs and really working to ramp up opportunities around those. Some examples that many of you may be familiar with are on Lorraine Avenue and on the Detroit Superior Bridge with plastic delineators that we can bolt in that don't require a lot of money, a lot of design, et cetera. So those are some examples of how design can contribute to safety.
I think to that point, you know, while we're really excited about these big transformative projects on the lakefront and the Superior Midway and the Lorraine Midway, you know, I think we need to be able to kind of, you know, chew gum and walk at the same time. And, you know, there are a lot of streets in Cleveland that are unsafe, and there's funding out there to be able to kind of retrofit our streets to make them safe. I think of roadways like even out here on Detroit Avenue where there's a bike lane, and, you know, that bike lane could easily be protected bike lane to make it safer for more people to be encouraged to go out and ride a bike for transportation. And I think those are, you know, we need to think big picture. We need to think big picture on those large projects, but we also can't forget these smaller projects that can have a big impact. You know, think of, you know, the city this past year installed 10 speed tables on residential streets and found great receptivity for them from the public and good results for calming traffic, like let's put them everywhere. You know, Detroit last year installed their 10,000th speed table in the city of Detroit. Like, let's get there.
I love that. A lot of applause for that one. I mean, I was getting ready to ask about what can we do as far as investment, increasing investment, and what does what we currently spend on safety, what does that say about our priorities? But the city and Bike Cleveland, your advocacy efforts and your implementation around these things has been very strong and moving us in the right direction. So we do thank and appreciate all the work that's been done so far. But let's talk a little bit about budget, though. You know, when the rubber hits the road and the budgets are allocated and competed over, what is it that we cannot afford to do?
So I'm a little bit of an outsider, and I'm going to let Callie, who knows much more about the city government, sort of respond to this. But I do think Cleveland doesn't have a lot of capacity for managing its road race. And that's not the current administration's fault. That's just historically. You drive around the city, and there's a traffic light at all these weird little places that nobody has thought about since the 1970s. It's not very well managed overall, even for people who drive. And we haven't had a lot of staff in the departments that manage this kind of thing. We haven't had a lot of capacity. So they are building that up, but we still have a long way to go to be like Seattle, who's implementing some of these really world-class street treatments. And it's difficult for a poor city like Cleveland. That's not to make excuses for them. I think we could do a lot better. But the capacity, the internal capacity at City Hall, I do think it's been a barrier in the past and probably will continue to be a little bit.
So in 2022, we adopted the Vision Zero Action Plan, which set a goal of eliminating serious injuries and fatalities from our roadways by 2032. That kind of put us on a decade-long course for safety improvements. Vision Zero, as many of you may be familiar, I know we have kind of an expert audience here tonight, is really about systems change to create safer streets. We've talked a lot about road design tonight, but Vision Zero also pulls in safe vehicles, which Angie has alluded to, safety around road users, the care that people receive after crashes, etc. I think there's maybe nowhere more that you appreciate the system that we have and the system that we need than maybe inside City Hall, which is a very cumbersome bureaucracy. And we are working right now in a system that hasn't been set up to deliver the safety outcomes that we really want to see. We are fortunate in this time with, frankly, President Biden in the White House and the Infrastructure and Investment Act, that there is a lot of funding available for improvements, for capital improvements, for multimodal improvements, for safety improvements. And the system is starting to change. We see that trickling through ODOT from Washington, and that is impacting us here in Cleveland as well. So over the last year, in a combination of federal grants as well as ARPA funding that came to Cleveland, as well as local funds, we have put together a budget of over $9 million to go towards safety and multimodal improvements. We can't put that all out on the road immediately. And so there is this systemic and structural work that has to happen to get those dollars out onto the streets. I appreciate Angie acknowledging capacity. Under Mayor Bibb's leadership, we've been really lucky to add 4 additional positions at City Hall, some of whom are here tonight, to help advance this work. It would be wonderful to have more, and I hope that we continue to build that team of really strong and passionate leaders that are doing the work day in and day out to make the changes that we're talking about here. And so I would just say this is an urgent issue. We're talking about people's lives here. I know all of us at this table and almost all of us in this room walk and bike daily, take transit daily, and are really dedicated to changing the ecosystem and the broader system that we're living and moving around in. And I know that all of us believe really firmly that people deserve a right to get safely to where they're going, and they shouldn't need to be in a car to do that. So I'll just say that from the city perspective, know that we are working on it, that our mayor, we're in a really good position in terms of the mayor understanding the importance of walking and biking safety, of putting investment, local investment behind that, and lining up state and federal investment as well.
I'll just add to kind of build that off. You know, I've worked at Bike Cleveland for 12 years and been through many iterations of city staff. And since Mayor Bibb was elected and hired these four additional staff to help advance these transportation projects, my job personally has become a lot easier in terms of how we advocate for bike infrastructure. So people make a difference, but having good people in those positions make a difference. And I think the city made a great decision on all the people that they hired. You know, it's almost like we have advocates within City Hall helping push for the things that we've been pushing for the past 12 years. Separate of that, I will note in terms of budgets, Bike Cleveland recently conducted some public interest polling commissioned by, as commissioned by Bike Cleveland, conducted by Baldwin-Wallace University, that found that 75% of Cleveland residents support the city investing more in safety for bicycles, pedestrians, and public transit users. And certainly there's a big opportunity with President Biden's Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and in some ways the Inflation Reduction Act. But city budgets are a moral document. And if the city isn't investing our tax dollars in the thing that the residents want, something isn't right. You know, $9 million is a big chunk of change, probably more than I've ever seen in my time at Bike Cleveland invested in safety in the city of Cleveland. But it's tough out there on the streets if you're walking or biking, y'all. Yeah, that's all I'll say.
Thank you for that. Yeah, it is tough out there. And, you know, that leads me to think about, you know, that study you did with Baldwin-Wallace, it says a lot about public perception and supporting a need to increase funding and education around active transportation. What is one topic around active transportation, just to build off of that, that you would like to see discussed more locally?
There's a lot. You know, I was to prepare for this conversation, I was looking up cities that I think we should replicate. And, you know, I've heard about Hoboken, New Jersey, who for the past 7 years hasn't had a single fatality on the roadways. Granted, they're a smaller city, 60,000 people. They only have 33 miles of roadways in the entire city, but they've implemented bike lanes on half of those roadways. And now they're working to protect those bike lanes on those roadways. And what they've done to get to Vision Zero are really simple things. Things like daylighting intersections at crosswalks to protect pedestrians to be more visible when they're crossing the street. Road diets. You know, these are conversations. I feel like in Cleveland, we have really great conversations about really big transformative projects, which are good because those will draw populations to our city. There'll be great assets for the residents that live here. But these smaller things like speed tables, curb bump outs that can really have an impact on pedestrian and bicyclist safety are things that, you know, we talk about as advocates and as city officials, but we really need the public to say, you know what, I'm sick of cars speeding down my street, and there's things that can be done about it. I will note the city does have a form to accept requests for speed tables, so Google City of Cleveland Traffic Calming Program, you'll find the webpage, and you can put your request in.
Angie, Callie, anything you want to add to that?
In terms of active transportation and conversation, I think a lot of the things that we've talked about so far are potentially things that at least we talk about a lot. and one additional piece that I'd like to layer onto that is this concept of neighborhood greenways. So we have talked about separated bikeways, and the major capital investment that can come along with those to create them, as well as ways to quickly build them for with lower cost materials. I personally, when I visited Portland, Oregon, had a great time navigating the neighborhood greenways in that city, which is wayfinding along slower residential streets. Because of the forum that Jacob mentioned, a lot of the traffic counts and speed data that we've been collecting across the city have also helped identify, in addition to where we need speed tables and traffic calming, really slow, comfortable streets that are great connectivity for us in terms of biking across the city. And I think hand in hand with separated bikeways, I'd love to be talking more about that in terms of how that can create a connected network for people of all ages and abilities to bike. I'll tip my hat to Jenna Thomas, who's on Bike Cleveland staff, and several residents who are in the room here today who have been working as part of Better Streets committees to map out neighborhood greenway routes in their neighborhoods. I'm really excited about talking about that more and helping to implement from the city perspective.
Okay. one thing I wish we talked about more sort of in these spaces is more of youth. I have two young kids. They just kind of sauntered out of here because they were bored with me. I do a little biking to school with them, and the car lines that we see around schools are so insane now. There's sort of I get this vibe from drivers that there's like a record scratch when you they see you biking with your kids. You don't see kids even playing outdoors anymore too much. So part of that is technology. I think we're dealing with a lot of crises sort of in our culture right now that are intersecting in some bad ways. But we have to make our neighborhoods safe places for kids to play and bike. You don't see kids even biking that much anymore. And we know that has big consequences for their health, not just their physical health, but their mental health. A lot of people are really struggling right now. So I think we could do a better job as a city kind of prioritizing their needs and thinking about them. And there's an opportunity to bring that more into these discussions.
Jacob?
Yeah, I'll just note, when it comes to youth, I agree with Angie. We're a small but mighty staff at Bike Cleveland, and since Callie gave a shout-out to Jenna, I'll give a shout-out to Dinah Hildebrand here, who runs our education program and is hosting education classes at Campus International School, and we've done them at Mary Bethune, but, it's definitely not enough. We're a small staff, and I think more certainly can be done to support our youth, and, they're our future bikers and our future walkers, it's... more than ever, young people are opting not to get a driver's license and opting to bike or walk or take public transit, and we need to be able to support those folks with the education that they deserve, but also with the infrastructure that they need to be able to do it safely.
No, thank you, Jacob. I really appreciate you brought that up. The education part is really important because Cleveland, we're a very car-centric town, and as improvements come along the way to improve bikeability and walkability, that education component to go along with it is really essential. Are there any other things that you think we should be doing around changing people's behavior and getting them to think more about active transportation?
Yeah, I think, you mentioned we're a car-centric community. That same Baldwin-Wallace public interest polling that we did, it found that 70% of Cleveland residents, primarily use their car to get around, but it also found that 66% of residents would opt to ride a bicycle if it was safe, convenient for them to do it. So I think that partially answers the question in terms of, if we want to get more people out biking and walking, we need to create the environments that make it safe for them to be able to do it. I don't know if I answered your question, Deidre.
No, that was great. That was great. Kelly, Angie, anything you want to add to that?
I'll add, building on the comment that Cleveland is a car-centric city, that transit is a really important component to people's ability to walk and bike because it does help cover longer distances in a more efficient time frame. And as we're thinking about all these pieces, they're really complementary, right? You can't walk everywhere. You can't bike everywhere. If you have a strong transit system, which in Cleveland we are blessed with a legacy transit system that has really good bones, it begins to create this ecosystem of multimodal options that are really functional for people. And so we've talked a lot today already about kind of the dangers of car use, of speeding. Research shows that cities with less car mode share, so more people taking transit, walking and biking, have much lower serious injury and fatality rates. And I would just say, because we have talked so much about walking and biking, that transit piece is a core component as well. I'm not sure if we're gonna get to talk about our magic wand. Is that coming?
Oh yeah, we have time to talk about that. And before we go to that question though, Angie, anything you wanna add?
So I'll just mention, because it hasn't come up yet, and it probably should, and I know the city is working on this, is that we could do better with our zoning, with our parking policies. And it is starting to come together in some neighborhoods. You know, I have a small business, and I rented an office in Tremont. And the reason I did it was because it's right off the Red Line Greenway, and every day my commute is just like glorious. I cannot believe it. Like, I have to pinch myself when I'm going past like the skyline and then the steel mill. And I think that that's really special infrastructure. And now you see apartments going up around it in the flats. And we do have those kind of assets we can build on. And I do think this administration recognizes that. And I know it's a difficult political discussion, but we have so much vacant land. There's so much opportunity. And I really think there is kind of a thirst for those neighborhoods. It's hard to believe we can support the number of apartments that are sort of popping up. From my office in Tremont, you can count 6 or 7 sort of mid-rise apartment buildings that include hundreds of units. So we need more folks in this city, and a lot of them are coming in and living on land that previously was kind of fallow. No one was even really using it. So I think that's really positive, one of the really positive things we've seen from the city in the last decade, and I'd love to keep the momentum going there.
Awesome, thank you so much. All right, so we got one closing question before we go into our Q&A, and so this final question for you all is, if you had a magic wand to rebuild Cleveland's East and West Side, to make it truly walkable, bikeable, great bones, as you said, build on our active transportation, what would be the first two things, real quick, two things that you would do, that you would wish for to transform our city?
So I'll double down on Angie's comments about transit-oriented neighborhoods. So my two would be, one, rebuild and revitalize our neighborhood centers around transit, and two, triple transit frequency on all of our transit lines.
So for me, it's just a couple corridors that come to mind. There's some corridors that are really dangerous that I would love to see overhauled. One that comes to mind is 117th, especially the corridors that low-income folks are using. Either they live by it or they're using it to connect to retail. We know those are the most deadly. We know what the most deadly streets in our city are for the most part. So streets like 117th, Carnegie, oh my God. I biked down Carnegie one time and it like my life flashed before my eyes many times. So some of those main corridors, especially where they are home to a lot of low-income people or a lot of retail that a lot of low-income people are trying to access for work, whatever reason.
Thank you, Angie. Jacob, what you got?
Yeah, my answer is probably pretty predictable. Well, the first one is a network of protected bike lanes that get people from where they are to their destination safely. And the second one, I'm just going to throw this out there because we haven't mentioned it, and it's a pretty... I feel like simple safety improvement, but implementing lead pedestrian intervals across the city to be able to give pedestrians, for those of you who don't know what a lead pedestrian interval is, it's a timing with crossing the street that gives pedestrians a little bit of extra time to get into the roadway before cars get to be able to turn or go, to give them a little bit more visibility in the crosswalk. And that's one of the things Hoboken, New Jersey did to get to zero traffic fatalities. And I feel like it's something pretty simple and easy we could do across the city to improve safety everywhere.
All right. Thank you all so much. It's a lot to chew on here. So we're about to begin the audience Q&A. So for our live stream audience or those who are just joining us, I'm Deidre McPherson, occasional bike consultant, bike enthusiast, and moderator for tonight's conversation. Joining me on stage is Callie Mersman, Senior Strategist of Transit and Mobility at the City of Cleveland, Angie Schmidt, author of the book Right of Way and founder of 3 Miles Per Hour Planning and Consulting, and Jacob Van Sickle, Executive Director of Bike Cleveland. If you're here with us in person, you can line up next to the microphone, and you can ask your question. We got someone there already. If you're joining us virtually, you can text your question 330-541-5794, and the City Club staff will work your questions in. All right, we're ready for our first question.
Hey, everyone. Great session. We need to have these conversations more. My name's Matt Zone, and had the honor of serving as a member of City Council when we established the Vision Zero concept. I want to make a brief comment, and then I have two questions. Brief comment. So in 2017, I heard Angie allude to it and Callie allude to it. We were looking at Franklin Boulevard, and there was a lot of skepticism in the community that change takes time, that there is all this reliance on the city solving all of these problems. So one question is, could you talk about the nuance of how you change systems and how it's more than just the public sector? So that's one question. And then the second is, what could fleets and vehicles, not only municipal fleets and vehicles, but what could the private sector do to modify their fleets and vehicles to make the city of Cleveland safer? 2017, in the fall, we formed the working group. January of 2018, we passed the first resolution. August of 2019, we engaged the consultant. Ultimately, the strategic plan came out, and you are all carrying the mantle well. So if you could respond to those two questions, thank you.
Okay, so yeah, I do think, you know, that we are up against some strong cultural headwinds, right? It's not just the city is bad. You know, the Hollywood is putting out these car racing movies where no innocent bystanders get killed, and that's sort of what we're contending with. Even on TikTok now, there's whole, like, communities that are trading tips about how to illegally modify their cars, and it's difficult. It's difficult culturally. So I know that puts, I think that changing our streets is part of changing the culture, and having conversations like this also can help elevate these issues. But it really is a sort of an uphill battle. And I know these folks are trying really hard to get the message out. And there's a need for more sort of elevation of those issues.
Yeah, I think, Councilman Zone, to your point around, you know, fleets and vehicles, the city did launch a pilot during the formation of the Vision Zero Action Plan around side guards, and they installed a series of side guards on City of Cleveland trucks. And for those of you who don't know what a side guard is, it's a piece of metal that's reinforced between a large truck's rear and front wheels that prevents underride crashes, whether you're on a bicycle getting sideswiped or a pedestrian getting sideswiped or a motor vehicle driving into the side of a truck. It prevents near catastrophic fatal crashes with those trucks. That's something I know is in the city's Vision Zero Action Plan, but hasn't really moved lately, but it's certainly something that's on our radar, and we have some good advocates in the city with Andy Young, a local truck attorney, is very interested in seeing that being deployed in the city of Cleveland.
Hi. Hello, I'm Nigaman Sridhar. Thank you for being here, and thank you for being talking about this important topic. Callie, this may be a question specific to you. Most of the conversation this evening has is focused on stuff that's happening on the west side. I know that Mayor Bibb has a specific focus on the southeast side of Cleveland. Can you speak a little bit about what kinds of things you and your team and overall the administration has, in terms of the topics of not just bicycle safety, pedestrian safety, but overall getting people safe on the streets on the southeast side of Cleveland? Thank you.
Sure, thank you for the question. One of the grants that we were just awarded is $2.3 million for safety improvements on St. Clair Avenue. As Angie alluded to, through the Vision Zero work, we know which streets are the most dangerous in terms of serious injuries and fatalities, and so that is allowing us to target them. Some of them are longer-term capital projects, like the Superior Midway. On the southeast side specifically, we're looking at Lee Road and have been talking with the community there a lot about how to create a safer corridor that is more connected in that area. We have a spectrum of approaches all the way from these longer term capital projects to very quick interventions. And so we're also tapping into a program that ODOT offers called the Pedestrian Safety Improvement Program that's all about systemic safety improvements, things that we've talked a lot about tonight, like curb extensions, push button pedestrian flashers for safer crossings where there are not signals, things like that. And so as we are guided by data from Vision Zero, we're really able to target and continue to invest in safety improvements in that way. I'll also talk a little bit about bicycle connectivity, because I know there have been a lot of high-profile trail developments on the west side, specifically with what we call the Tiger Trails that Cleveland Metro Parks recently cut the ribbons on, including the Red Line Greenway and the final section of the Towpath Trail. Cleveland Metro Parks, along with the city and other partners, are working on an east side component to that, colloquially called the Race Trails, based on the funding source that will knit together east side communities as well. So those are some examples.
Just to add on that, I think the two other things on the east side that are in the works are, one, a capital improvement project on Payne Avenue, which will for sure have a bike lane, hopefully a protected bike lane, as well as the city's committed to do a comprehensive study of the East 55th Street corridor from the lake to Broadway Slavic Village, which is on the city's high injury network and also makes a logical connection to the terminus of the Superior Avenue Midway project as well.
Hey, Bianca Butts, daughter of Buckeye, happy to be here. Two questions, certainly adjacent. My predecessor kind of tapped into the southeast side that I was going to ask about, but for Jacob and anybody else on the panel, first, I'm really interested in uplifting the resident voice in these processes and infrastructure that we're discussing here in this forum. So how are your organizations or institutions tapping into residents, or how can residents reach into you to be involved in this work? That's number one. But number two, why is this work around bike infrastructure, mobility, transportation important to what's happening overall in the city of Cleveland? So when I think about our mayor and our administration, Mayor Bibb is at the helm of the climate mayors nationally. That's significant. The city of Cleveland has national recognition in climate resilience and sustainability. I don't know if many people know that here at home, but nationally, we're doing some good stuff. So how does this work fit into the overall grand scheme of things as it relates to Cleveland becoming or moving beyond a 21st century city, but really becoming a city that is a green city on a blue lake? How is mobility and bike infrastructure connected to that purpose and that cause?
Thanks, Bianca. I'll start with that, if that's okay. In terms of incorporating resident voice, we have opportunities along that spectrum from quick and routine to major capital projects. People can visit clevelandohio.gov/traffic calming to submit survey information about streets that they're concerned about speeding on that we'll review for traffic calming, all the way to those additional staff that I mentioned, really helping to make a more robust community engagement practice around our major capital projects. We are also always accessible through the 311 line, emails to the mayor's office, we hear from residents through council people, and we're also trying to evolve the ways that we engage and where we're engaging with residents so that we're meeting people where they are, things like pop-up tents outside of convenience stores, et cetera, to not require people to have to come to a big public meeting in an evening when they're trying to do family stuff, but meeting them as they're going around their daily life and activities.
One thing we like, a tool I like to use in my business is something called pedestrian safety audits. And we get residents together and we just walk around the neighborhoods. And I think part of the problem with the way we did infrastructure in the past is it just wasn't very responsive to the public's concerns. We're good at building big things, but we're not very good at going back and saying sort of how does this work. So I think those are both really good questions. And I just want to respond to the other one real quickly. How does this relate to the big problems in the city? Obviously, the city is, you know, everywhere is really struggling right now with a lot of really serious issues. I was surprised that during the pandemic, the New York Times came to town and they were talking with residents in Slavic Village. And reckless driving came up kind of top of the list for those folks, or it was mentioned repeatedly sort of in the article. People were really kind of driven nuts by what was going on with that, and I think there's a little bit of a disorder sort of narrative that it's a part of. So I do think it's important to people in their neighborhoods, and part of what we need to do right now in our culture recovering from the pandemic is kind of to restore public trust So if the city can be out there sort of solving problems that matter to residents, that's really important. And if they can trust, then if they have trust in government, then when a traffic calming project is proposed, they're not suspicious or conspiratorial. They say, you know, I trust that people have my best interests at heart. This is an important thing from the community. And we can discuss it in a rational way and make progress on some of our big problems.
In terms of elevating resident voice, I like to think that's a big priority of Bike Cleveland. We recently hired a new community organizer, Gerard Shakir. Gerard, raise your hand. Where are you at? Hey-o. And one of Gerard's duties is to meet with residents who have had issues related to biking or walking and safety, and to help elevate and tell their stories. So if you're interested in telling a story, reach out to Gerard over there. In addition, you know, we host a number of events and programs in the neighborhoods. Deidre organizes a great event in Buckeye called Bike Your Neighborhood. You know, yeah. Woo! And all of those activities are ways to kind of get feedback and hear from residents. And you know, I always tell people there's no greater advocate than somebody riding a bike. In terms of biking and walking being a silver bullet, which is kind of the question I got from Bianca, you know, Cleveland, we're a very unhealthy city, you know? Decades life difference between Lyndhurst and Hough. We're a city that, you know, we're striving to be a green city on a blue lake, but we're still a very gray city with a lot of pollution. And not that, you know, creating ways for people to bike and walk and take public transit are the silver bullet to all these solutions. They're a key to the puzzle. And they could be a simple key to the puzzle with quick investments that make it safe for people to do. As the public polling shows, people want to bike, people want to walk. We just need to build the environments that make it safe for them to do so. I don't like it when my son gets home from school and he says, hey, it's 70 degrees, Dad, I want to go ride my bike. And the whole time I'm just worried about him getting hit by a car from the careless drivers coming home from work at 5 o'clock. That shouldn't happen in the city. And again, another silver bullet, mental health. Traffic violence has huge mental health impacts on our community. So there you go.
Hello, I'm Jonathan, neighborhood resident, general bike and transit rider. And I wanted to just jump back to the infrastructure piece. So I've encountered some really nice protected bike infrastructure in Dayton and some really nice kind of neighborhood greenway traffic calming infrastructure in cities like Pittsburgh. And I've had probably some of my better like biking experiences in cities like that. And then in Cleveland, you know, where I've had some of my worst experiences have been in, on paper, like what is a pretty good bike lane. So anecdotally, like 100% of the times I've been hit by drivers, I was in the bike lane on Euclid. And so I'm really curious kind of your thoughts on the evolution of biking infrastructure in the city, and specifically kind of that gradient from Sharrows up to much more complex projects. So historically Cleveland has really considered Sharrows to be bike infrastructure. And I think even as of like 2022, Sharrows were kind of considered part of the 17 miles of bike infrastructure that had been constructed. So I guess my two-part question would be, one, what's the consensus on Sharrows? And then beyond that, are there any plans for more shorter term to medium term within this year or soon protected infrastructure? Maybe less comprehensive than something like the Lorraine project, but more comprehensive than a painted buffer.
Thanks for the question, Jonathan. We are operating at a little bit of a disadvantage in terms of bicycle connectivity because we are operating on a bikeway master plan that was adopted in 2007 and 2008. And so ever since then, we have added the bike infrastructure that was kind of typical at that time, the conventional painted bike lanes, Sharrows, things like that, and then have capital projects that are kind of one-offs, so result in disconnected pieces that are lacking in that comprehensive connectivity. We are undertaking a citywide mobility plan update right now as we speak. Many of you, I hope, will come out and talk to us over the next couple of months, give your input, and a key deliverable of that plan is a 3-year rapid implementation strategy for what we're calling an all ages and abilities bike network. So that looks like protected facilities, that looks like lower stress neighborhood greenway type facilities. And so what we're really looking at is that comfortable separation from high speed or sharing the street with very low speed traffic calmed vehicles that are safe and comfortable for Jacob to take his kids out biking, that maybe my grandparents would be comfortable riding on. So that is the goal, that is the intent, and we're developing a strategy to build that out rapidly in the city over the next 3 years.
Yeah. Let's get an applause for that, because a new bike plan will help provide a lot of direction for the work that we're doing. And Jonathan, to answer your question, Bike Cleveland's positions on Sharrows is they aren't infrastructure. They're just signs that notify motorists that bikes might be here.
Jacob and I remember like more than a decade ago, were begging the city to install Sharrows. And they, this is how far we've come. And they complained at the time that they didn't have a stencil. And that was their excuse. So I do think, and we fought for the first bike lane on Detroit Avenue. And that was probably a decade ago. And now we have this great trail infrastructure. So I think we've come a long way, at least in this area. But, we have a long way to go throughout the city.
I think another way we've come a long way, if anybody that commutes on their bike from downtown, the city recently installed flexible posts in the bike lane headed out of downtown into Ohio City. And I know we get a lot of flack from cyclists of, they're just plastic posts, can we do something better? It's a step in the right direction. And, 2 years ago, or actually in 2018, when the city first implemented the eastbound side of the Detroit Superior Bridge, we were told, no, we're not going to do that. So there is this shift within City Hall that we're seeing that are more open to the things that we all want to see on the street.
We have time for one more question.
Evening, my name's Brian. So I used to work on the top floor of Key Tower, 57th, and I could see all the city. I used to work on the top floor of 57th floor, and I could see the whole city, and I could see all the streets going out with the traffic lights on them. And I'm wondering if we can use the infrastructure to our benefit. Like a minute ago, somebody alluded to Carnegie as a nightmare. Now, when I was on the top of the 57th floor, you could see these traffic lights are on green, 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 and then there'd be a red, and then there'd be a green, green, green. But if you could kind of set it up so as Carnegie had all the traffic lights run green, if you were doing 35 mile an hour, you could send a packet of cars through that there, and they're all doing 35, so you're kind of constraining the traffic speed, and that keeps all the cars, the traffic, on Carnegie. But then Euclid doesn't quite have that, and then Euclid is a bike-friendly street to get out pretty much to the same direction. So we're kind of like making traffic lights work in our favor that then kind of make drivers favor certain streets, east, west, north, south. Well, not north, we're in the lake. But I'm just wondering if the infrastructure could be looked at to make certain streets favorable for drivers and certain streets favorable to cyclists.
Thank you for bringing up traffic signals. We've talked a lot today about concrete and curbs. Signals are definitely a tool in the toolbox, and the timing of those is something that does help that we can adjust relatively easily, as Jacob said, without a lot of budgetary impact to create the environment and the conditions that we want for the behavior that we want on the street. I appreciate you mentioning that.
From my experience, the thing I saw was, you'd have just lights, a group of lights would change together, but there would be one or two that just wasn't synchronized, and it's like, we have the technology now, AI and everything.
Yes.
We have all the technology for all these to talk to each other, and we can send packets of cars through the city, and everybody's happy. The drivers are happy, and the cyclists are happy, walkers are happy. That's all.
Brian, when you came up and you said you were at the top floor of 57 Key Tower, I thought about a time I was on the 42nd floor of Key Tower, and I looked out the window at rush hour and saw Superior and St. Clair and Carnegie all basically empty of cars during rush hour. And I think that just speaks to the volumes of the excess capacity we have in our city and the positive that we could have if we utilize that space for good.
All right, let's wrap up. So thank you once again to Callie, Angie, and Jacob for joining us at the Happy Dog. Forums like this one are made possible thanks to generous support from individuals like you, everyone in this room. You can learn more about how to become a guardian of free speech and make a donation today at cityclub.org. Tonight's forum is also part of the City Club of Community Series, sponsored by Bank of America. And speaking of community, be sure to join the City Club at the Total Eclipse Fest on April 6th to the 8th. The festival is a three-day celestial celebration in partnership with the Great Lakes Science Center and NASA at North Coast Harbor and downtown Cleveland. The City Club will be hosting several free forums on science-related topics, so stay tuned at cityclub.org for those announcements. Thank you to members and friends of the City Club, both here and streaming live. I'm Deidre McPherson, and this forum is now adjourned.